Heyo, it's Chase. This week continues our journey back into the archives to bring you some of our very best episodes. Today's is especially a favorite of mine. Now, we're going to be back with new episodes in November, and don't forget that we'll be live at SupConf New York City on November 15th and 16th. I hope you can be there. Now, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of the Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. Jeff's running a little bit late still, so he's going to join in as soon as he gets here. But the other gent that we've got on the show is a familiar face, Chase Livingston. Wow, that's really bad. I guess I just got distracted. I wasn't thinking about it. But the other guest, Chase Livingston, a normal on the show here. Chase, how are things over at Automatic?
They're going well. I'll forgive you for that slip up there, but I'm sure it was the dashing good looks of Jeff that got you mixed up.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, so we are at 85 episodes now, and I figure over that time we haven't made a bunch of mistakes. I mean, here and there, you know, so we're due one at this time.
That's true, yeah.
So it's just bound to happen. And, you know, when Jeff gets here, most of you know him, but for those of you that don't, Jeff's the product guy over at Wistia, so... That's where his background is, if you've never met him. With this show, we're going to be talking about something that's kind of, it's one of those that I've been watching kind of, I don't know, the internet, the Twitterverse, whatever you want to call it, wrestle back and forth with for a couple of weeks now. It's one of those where I was hesitant to bring it up as a show topic, but it is a good show topic, and it's one of those that has got lots of different opinions around it. So I think it should make for a pretty good episode here. And so what we're going to be talking about for this one is the difference, or even if there is a difference, between customer support teams and customer success teams. And, you know, we can use a bunch of different phrases and nouns and whatever other names you want to use. But basically, the difference comes down to people say that customer support is more of a reactive thing. So something's broke, customers are writing in, and they're going to help them out. Whereas customer success is more along the lines of they don't necessarily handle reactive things. It's more they're handling making sure that customers are using your app the best they can and to help them get the most out of it and achieve success with your app, basically. So companies will split teams up like that. And like I said, they'll have a bunch of different names and that kind of thing. But we want to talk about that kind of split, if it makes sense, if it's the right thing to do, some advantages, disadvantages, and all that kind of fun stuff. So we'll just kind of dive into it here. So Chase, with Automatic, there's a semi-split in the team, right? Because you've got like your VIP team that handles customers and things like that. But do you... like, do you see there being this kind of support versus success, two different teams happening at Automatic?
In some ways, maybe. I think for the most part, those of us in support are also obviously really concerned about making sure our users succeed and giving them the tools to do that. You know, we support efforts like, you know, blogging 101 and a few other things that some folks at Automatic put on to get people started in, you know, writing good content, regular content for their blogs and, you know, advancing their writing skills, that kind of thing. And there's always people from support involved in that. So I think, you know, in those aspects, we're definitely, you know, right there with customer success and support all in the same vein, making sure that obviously the technical aspects and the things like that are figured out for the user so that they can do what they need to do, but also make sure that, you know, they're just learning how to blog regularly and what makes, you know, a good blog post, what makes good writing, you know, all that kind of stuff as well. We do have other teams that are looking at, you know, churn rates and that kind of stuff. And they're, you know, obviously concerned with customer success and customer engagement as well. So I think we're kind of, you know, situated in the middle there where we're obviously concerned about the success of our customers, but also helping them make sure that things are working properly so that they can succeed.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I guess, one of the terms floating around names, whatever you're calling it, it's that onboarding process. So people new to your app, getting up and running with it, making sure that, you know, their goal being, I want to blog, and WordPress being like, hey, here, you can use us to do that. Mm-hmm. Have you ever run into a case where you've had somebody that was working with the VIP team or the success team that basically just passes off a ticket of saying, yeah, this isn't really us. This is more like reactive, like y'all can handle it. I've got more important things to do.
That generally doesn't happen too much. With VIP, they obviously work with our larger customers, but they also have their own happiness engineers that are actually on the VIP team. If it's a VIP developer that gets a question, maybe that doesn't necessarily, need a developer-y response, maybe they'll pass that off to a happiness engineer to answer or something like that. But on the Jetpack or the WordPress.com side, that doesn't happen so much since we're kind of all working in the same vein as far as customer success, as well as answering bug report questions and that kind of thing. We could answer a question about why is my custom CSS not working properly, or, sometimes we'll even get users that contact us just saying, could you take a look at my site? Let me know if you think the theme I've chosen is great, or take a look at this blog post and let me know what you think about it, that kind of thing. So I think, those types of questions span customer support and success, all in all.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those where I don't think there's really a silo between the two, right? The end goal here is to help the customer. And regardless if you're on a success team or a support team or whatever other way you want to phrase it, it's still at the end of the day, you're there to help the customer.
Right.
Speaking of which, Jeff's here, so we're going to get his brilliant insights on everything now. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a sweaty mess right now. I hope it doesn't come across in the video.
It's okay. I mean, most people listen to the audio version, so we're fine. It's totally fine. So we're just talking about with Automattic, you've got kind of VIP teams that handle some stuff and more traditional customer support that's on the other side. But it's really kind of a blended thing. Like nobody, there's not a big wall in between the two, and they're not saying, these are your type of cases, these are my type of cases, and they're the only things I'm going to work on. So Jeff, when it comes to Wistia and kind of how you have set up the team over there, do you feel like there's any team breakdown, team split as far as the support versus success thing goes?
So there isn't currently. We're currently in the formation stages of a customer success team. And I think what that means to me, just kind of echoing what you just kind of recapped for me, is that the people will be different, right? And perhaps their high level responsibilities are different, but that if there are silos, right? If it's like, I received this conversation, but this seems pretty reactive, I think I shouldn't have to answer this, then we failed. Then we failed because, like you were saying, both teams, customer support and customer success, are there to serve and create value for the customer. And that if we look at that as the end goal, then it's like, hey, somebody wrote into me, I'm going to reply and try to get them help. But that the core responsibilities of those two teams will be different. So support will be saying, support would be handling high level responsibilities like, how do we make the process better for someone when things go bad, right? How do we handle the response such that people are, kind of put back on the track of getting done what they wanted to do? And success will be perhaps more along the lines of, how do we proactively help customers get more out of the product? It's hard to put into words. I think that there is a challenge. The reason why I would advocate for splitting them into different teams people-wise is that people deserve the opportunity to focus in on a certain set of responsibilities. And I've had experience on both sides. I've had it where it was like everybody does a little bit of everything, and we've had it where certain people have focused on things, and you just get a lot more out of the focus and the clarity. I think people appreciate that. But in terms of somebody saying, this is not something I will do, this support inquiry is just not right for me. I'm customer success, so I'm going to redirect this over to our support team. You end up with that phone tree thing that we're all picking on all the time and we're afraid of of ending up with. So that's kind of how I think about that.
Yeah. So do you see, I know one of the things that that I kept seeing here and there on Twitter, for instance, was that customer support was kind of a basic entry level thing. And then you get promoted out of that, or you get upgraded out of that, or however you want to phrase it. Is that how you kind of see setting it up at Wistia? Like, you bring folks in on the support side, and then basically they get bumped up the career path into success?
That's not how we're currently thinking about it. I think that the organizations that are maybe moving the opposite way, so we're moving up the, I don't know what the word is, funnel from inbox to, you know, something that's before the inbox. There may be organizations that move the other way from sales to customer success, right? And so they take the things that that sales was responsible for, and they put those on customer success. And so they may be more likely to say, oh, we need more experienced folks who are going to be able to handle the responsibility of this metric, right? But for us, it people are different. Some people really love the problem-solving aspect of, you know, it's like customer support sometimes is like being locked in a room with a bomb that requires a Rubik's cube to, you have to solve a Rubik's cube to put out the bomb, and you know, you're under time pressure. And people love the high of solving those problems. And they love when people come back to them and say, this is amazing. Thank you so much for your help. Other people are more like, I like to have the vaguer problems. I like to deal with things that don't even necessarily line up with our product, what our product does. I'd like to just talk in general with our customers. Or perhaps they're more like, I like to do work that's just in the background. And what it's really all about is reducing the amount of time someone spends in support. And that might line up better with customer success. So for us, onboarding messaging or that experience that you get during onboarding that is prompting you to have a further conversation with somebody about your experience, about training and that kind of thing, that I believe is going to live in customer success moving forward. And so there'll be people on that team that live completely in the background, and they don't get necessarily the high of someone saying, this is a thank you, you know, specific person. Thank you, Chase, for your help, which you totally get in customer support. People love that. So no, we're not currently thinking that we need, that we're going to necessarily go that way, but I'm not sure. I have no experience in this typical caveat, I suppose.
That's what makes it fun. It's like, this is what we think, and then 6 months from now we can go back and be like, oh, Jeff was totally right in all of his wisdom. So
let's go totally wrong, let's assume that.
So Chase, when it comes to Automattic, is that kind of the feeling too? I mean, you moved from kind of the WordPress.com support over into more of a niche Jetpack support. But do people at Automattic see like support as being an entry level thing, and then you move out of that, you grow out of it?
That's one of the things we actually try, I guess, not to do at Automattic. So a lot of times if an applicant, you know, expresses their interest in, you know, getting a job at Automattic, and they say, you know, I would like to start in support, but I just kind of want to use that as a jumping off point. We try to discourage that as much as we can, because at Automattic, support is really looked at on the same level as any other team. You know, I feel like we're seen as just as important as any, you know, development product team, anything like that, because without the support, the users would have a much harder time, you know, using the product and that kind of thing. So that's something we try to avoid as much as possible. That's not to say it doesn't happen occasionally. You know, a person in support decides that they really like, you know, PHP development or something like that, and maybe they change roles to be a code wrangler or something. But it's not, definitely not the common thing that happens. It's more of an exception to the rule.
Yeah, and just to give our listeners kind of a base with Basecamp. That's still rough on the alliteration. Sorry, we're pretty flat as far as all of this goes. Like, we don't have, we don't have a bunch of sales reps going out and trying to sell Basecamp. When it comes to customers talking with us, they tend to talk to our support team, and we handle pretty much everything. I mean, everything from this is broke, can you please fix it, all the way up to I've got this problem, I'm looking at Basecamp to solve it, can Basecamp help our team on that? I'm kind of the traditional like success quote unquote kind of thing. Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't know if you're going to move on, and I wanted to make sure that I asked. So that's pretty much the opposite of what I was advocating for in terms of focus. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about why that is?
Yeah. And this will segue nicely to what I was thinking about too. The reason we do that is that we really enjoy having a flat company. We really like having teams that can pretty much do anything that they need to. And we strive for that kind of team independence. So whether it's like us figuring out customer questions on our own, or if somebody's working on a new feature, they're able to, the programmer designer are able to do everything they need without having to talk to ops as much or anything like that. We really like keeping things as flat as possible. So when you keep things flat like that, when you don't specialize in billing or success or anything, any other phrase that or any other name you want to throw out there, you kind of have to be a jack of all trades here. So when a customer writes to us, I need to be able to answer, if a customer says, I'm looking for A, B, and C, I need to know Basecamp well enough to say, yes, I understand your situation, and yes, Basecamp would be a good fit, or no, here's another option that I think would be a better fit over us. And I need to be able to answer if that customer comes back 2 months later and says, hey, something's borked out with my to-do list, I can't figure out why it's broke, can you fix it? I need to be able to do that too. Because when you do that, I think the biggest thing is you get all the advantages of being a flat company. There's no like bumping it up. There's no passing cases off. There's no risk of somebody being like, oh no, I don't handle those cases. Like you kind of get all that by default. But I think the biggest thing is that I become better at my job and being able to help customers at that point. I better understand what Basecamp can do, and I better understand what customers are looking for. So when a customer does talk to me, they get a better overall experience than they would if I was just kind of siloed off and only did kind of entry-level support kind of things.
So let me just make a quick counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
Again, I want to just stop you from moving on to something else. I'm totally not trying to cut you off at all. But I know how smoothly you keep the show running.
Cut it off. It's great.
Throw wrenches in the gears wherever I can. I will say that is excellent. To me, from the outside, that seems excellent if you want to be at Basecamp forever. Or for...
Jeff comes in with this great point, and then his internet dies off, so we don't know what the point is. So that's what's going on there. That's why he's not talking anymore. So we're going to give him a second. And I will say, yeah, it is designed if you want to be at Basecamp for a while, because... A lot of the people on our team are looking at being at Basecamp for 10, 20, 30 years. I'll put a link in the show notes to the last episode of The Distance that Jason did. And he gets that question a lot. People ask him, what's your next app? What's your next idea? What do you want to do after Basecamp? And he doesn't. He wants Basecamp to be, the final job. And that's like me. If Basecamp will have me for 30 years, that's what I want to be doing for 30 years. The idea that, I think a lot of tech companies, you jump around, right? Like people stay somewhere for 3 years, they jump to something else, and then they stay there for 3 or 4 years, they jump to something else. Like, I don't think you can ever get really great at what you do when you do that. Jeff's back on that one. Yay. A recap for Jeff real quick. It's one of those, so you ask about staying at Basecamp for a while. I want to be at Basecamp for a while. I want to be at Basecamp in 10, 20, or 30 years, or basically however long they'll have me until they like throw me out the door somewhere. Because I think that's when, I think to all the really good examples in my life of really great customer support, service, whatever you want to call it that I get. And I think back toward like my USAA rep. I've got one account manager there that knows who I am, knows the details of my financial situation, and is going to be there for the long haul. Like they're going to help me when I'm 50 and figuring out retirement, just like I am now and figuring out retirement. So, you get to build these multi-year relationships with customers. And I think customers really, really value something like that. So if you were going with that, as far, I kind of just assumed that you were going with do you want to be with Basecamp? Was that the question we were aiming for?
Well, I just, I think that that approach of getting really good at Basecamp and being able to help any customer with any problem across all of Basecamp is really, really good. Like if I'm a manager and I'm setting that up as a possibility for someone that I work with, then that's really, really good if I want them to be there, if I expect them to be there for 5 years. And not that I don't expect people to be there, because I do, but also I guess I think that also they'll go on to do other special things within support. And maybe that's a good assumption. Maybe it's a bad one. I haven't been at it long enough to tell you whether that's right or not. But if they are, then my initial opinion would be they deserve the ability to focus in on something so they can make lots of progress, and people will start to say, wow, you're a real guru when it comes to setting. So like Emily is deep on documentation now, right? So she's like, this is just, you know, quick leak. We're changing the name of our documentation, which has been documentation for 7 or 8 years, and it's going to be changed because Emily got into it, started user testing it, and realized that people are scared of that name. And I was, that was always here, kind of like
just throwing it out. Yeah. We heard it here on Support Ops first.
Exactly. And it was always like secondary. Well, secondary is wrong. It was always like tertiary or whatever comes after tertiary for me to do something like that, such a major undertaking. But for her, it's like, this is her number one thing. And she's making changes that only someone who it's their number one thing can make. So that's like my limited experience counterpoint. But it sounds like what you're doing is creating a really great experience for it. It does. I agree that it does create a really great experience for every employee that's there.
Yeah. And so don't get me wrong. We do have, I guess, a good way of calling it would be side projects, right? So one of the things that I work on a lot with Marissa from our team is the online classes that we do. We're constantly adapting those, making sure they're up to date, making sure that we're thinking along the lines of what's the next class that we could offer. Or like if we do a new version of Basecamp, we would be thinking about how we could structure a new class all about that version. We do side projects like that. Emily and Joan and our team are doing great things with the help documents, we're not at the point yet. I think this might be the key thing, right? We're not at the point yet where we have to have somebody full-time on nothing but the KB. And some teams are bigger and some products are bigger. I think of like Campaign Monitor, who have, you know, a couple of people devoted towards making their KB as great as it possibly could be. We're just not at that size yet. Like you said, you know, 6 months down the road, a year down the road, that might change. I don't know. But for right now, having everybody be able to do that kind of success along with support really works out. I think, you know, kind of along the same point, if you're only doing, you know, tricky cases all day, if you're deep diving into code to figure out one bug that's affecting like 5 customers, that can get kind of mentally draining after a while. So if you can intersperse that with, you know, questions from customers that are more success trending. So like, you know, customer comes up and says, hey, I'm starting a blog, teach me how to blog. Like that's a nice refreshing break from that, from the kind of monotony that goes into just staring at bugs all day or that kind of thing. So yeah, that was going to be, that's what we do at Basecamp 10 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Jeff, you got me off my train of thought there. That was the least effective segue that we've ever done. So it's nice. Okay. So one of the other big things that is going to come to mind too. We talked about being promoted out from support into a success team. And I think all of us are kind of agreeing here. So you have a customer team, right? Like that team is there to help the customer with whatever they need. Jeff, you talked about, you don't really, you know, you've got a success team that's coming up, but it's not, you're getting promoted out of it or anything like that quite yet. Is that a smart move for companies? And I know you know, our companies are going to be a little bit different than like Microsoft or whatever. But if a SaaS company is coming along and setting up their support team, do you think that's better to keep it as kind of like this team, these people help customers versus, you know, here's one team that helps customers and here's another team that does it in a different way? Like, what's the smart move for somebody that's, you know, our size or smaller, trying to get set up with their customer team?
Well, I can only share what we're doing, which is creating a separate team. And I think we're going to do some hiring internally, and we're going to bring on some people externally. One thing that this kind of reminds me of is, or I guess one way to take your question is, if we did the thing where we promoted people, right? And for people who are listening to the audio version, because I forget that there's an audio version, I'm doing the air quotes. So that then we'd be in a place where there wouldn't be that many experienced people left doing support, right? It would be like entry level, right? Again, doing air quotes. And it reminds me of a conversation I had with Vincent from Pardot. I think he is like head of all support at Pardot, or, you know, he's head of the customer team or something, like you said. And pretty early on, he went to their engineering team and was like, we need engineering help on support. We need a level of support that is actually engineers, not support people. Who is down to help me with this? And a bunch of people raised their hand, and they've been doing it now for years, right? That they have like this tier three thing that's actually engineers at that point in the funnel who are there to help answer customer problems. And what that tells me is that you need really experienced, really smart people in support all the time. And there are certain people that love to do it. They just love that setup. They love, I don't know, the problems that they solve, the way that the team interacts. I'm not sure what they love, but they love it, right? And other people, conversely, maybe love more of the other stuff. Maybe they're, like we were talking about before, they're coming from like an account management background, and customer support sounds really scary to them, but customer success sounds something that's right up their alley. I think that I don't know exactly how a team should handle it, and I am wary of doing the normal support ops. Like, it all depends on your company and your product, whatever. But I don't think it should be this thing where customer success. I don't think it should be that customer success lives above customer support, and that the way you get into customer success is by being promoted. I think that you have to hire specifically for customer success. It's a different, and support, and they're different. They can be different kinds of people who succeed and succeed.
Yeah, Chase Livingston, what do you think? Is it different kind of people that are, you know, going to be in these two different kind of teams? Do you think, what do you think of Jeff's remarks there?
I think I sort of agree, but also think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, at Automatic, we definitely, I think in some ways kind of blur the lines between customer success and customer support. And so we do have some initiatives and some side projects that many of our happiness engineers are involved in that are more customer success oriented rather than just, you know, answering tickets and helping users with bugs or problems they're having with the software. I definitely think there are some people that may be better suited or may have the skills and things like that for customer success versus support. But also think from experience, it's pretty easy to blur those lines as well and delve into both worlds from a support standpoint or a success standpoint.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those where there's no clearance. Well, okay. So I am going to pull the traditional like support ops, like your mileage may vary on all of this because what works for Automatic or Basecamp or Wistia might not work for, I don't know, like Airbnb or Uber or whatever it is, right? But I think the biggest thing, and I think the most, I don't know, like I said earlier, the most heartbreaking thing I saw when this discussion kept coming up again and again online was that the idea that your customer support team is kind of your code monkey equivalent. It's the, you're getting into the company and then you're going to start walking up the ladder. And for those of you on the audio version, this is me doing my hands up in the ladder kind of thing. I think we need to describe that from now on like Jeff did. And when it came up in the support driven Slack, and side note, if you're not, you know, if you're not involved in the support driven Slack, yeah, I think you're really missing out, at least like reading through and catching some of the conversations as you can. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But when it came up there, the analogy that I found that worked really well is your typical firefighters from your local town, right? So your firefighters are people that go out and do both reactive and proactive support. They're the ones who, when there's a fire going, they're the ones that go and put it out and help whoever's in the fire and in the building and that kind of thing and all that. But when there's not, they're also doing a lot of proactive things. So one of the big things that our town does is, just like everybody else, I'm sure, is they go out and they test all the fire hydrants to make sure those work. Some of them come by like local city businesses and come in and make sure like all your fire escapes are working right. And you've got fire extinguishers and all those other, your smoke alarms are working, like all the little things that go into help preventing massive fires from happening. There's no distinctions in all that, right? I mean, it's usually the full firefighter crew are out and doing whatever they need to that day. And if they get called away to a fire, then that's where they go into next. And all that, you might see some specialization, you know, crews that might have like EMS medical personnel embedded in them, that kind of thing. But for the most part, your crew is your crew. Your team is your team. And it doesn't matter if you're doing proactive stuff today and reactive stuff tomorrow. That's just who you are. You're helping the town against, I don't know, I guess big bad enemy fires would be in this example. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the best way I found to explain it is that's customer support, right? You're doing proactive stuff one day, you're doing reactive stuff one day, you're going to mix and match. No one, you know, just because part of your team is doing proactive stuff today doesn't mean they're any better or worse or anything else than you. It's just, that's what was required from them that day. If that makes any sense whatsoever. So anyways, that's kind of my last couple of thoughts. Guys, anything else you want to throw in? See, I love that we do this video because I can see Jeff being like, challenge cake. Remember, we need to bring that back.
No, I'm not, but I'm not challenging. Challenge cake had such a confrontational feel to it, and I would never challenge Chase Clemens. That is just a bad idea to a fighter. Otherwise, this guy doesn't look like he's like 6'4", but he's 6'4". Actually, Chase Howell, 6'2"?
About 6'1", 6'2".
I'll go 6'2". but felt like 6'4". He's just punching down on my head. What I was going to say is, we're about to kick off the hiring process for customer success folks. And I don't know how much of a role I'll be playing in it, but one thing that's very important to me is that they would know and in an interview would be excited about the idea of tackling reactive support problems. Right? I think we've lost if we get to a place where someone is saying, I can't do that. Right? Same thing as like an engineer saying, I can't solve customer bugs because I'm only on the new feature team. I don't think that's terribly useful either. But I would want to create responsibilities for each team such that they're measured on something different. So that even though they have the sense of obligation or service to the customer, right? And they solve the problem that's in front of them. When we review the work that was done in customer support versus customer success, we're looking at it through different lenses. We're looking at it for when we come up with goals or projects to tackle or that kind of thing, they're going to be specific to the mission of that team. That's kind of what I'm getting at, is that people deserve that. I think that will help them get to better work, but that if a necessary, and I don't have the experience to say this, but if a necessary byproduct of that is that then people are saying like, ew, support, icky, like I can't actually talking to a customer, like I can't do that. Or talking to a customer that only pays us $25 a month, like, ugh, I could never do that. Then we've really messed up. I was gonna ruin your iTunes rating, but we've really messed it up.
I think that rating was ruined a long time ago. So that's fine. Yeah, I think at that point you have messed up, and it's probably a myriad of things that were contributing to that. Not necessarily, you know, oh, we decided to have a customer support and a customer success team. I think it's at that point you just messed up in the bigger picture here. Livingston, anything you want to throw in?
No, I think that was an interesting discussion. I like that a lot.
Yeah, we handled it like adults, which look, seriously, some of y'all on Twitter need to grow up. I mean, some of the conversations and everything else were just really, you're better than that. Not our listeners, of course. Our listeners are awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say, who are we talking about? I mean, is anybody who hears this going to fall in that camp, or what are we talking about? What are we talking about?
No, they're not, because our listeners are fantastic, and that's one of those where we actually had intelligent conversations about all this. So anyway, I know lots of you do have really great opinions and thoughts and everything else on this topic, so let us know, supportapps.co/contact, because I would love to kind of round the discussion out, because we're just, you know, we're three different companies, but they're, you know, the last time I talked to a bunch of our listeners and did a listener survey and everything else, there's, you know, one person support teams all the way up to like hundreds and hundreds. So it's really cool that we've got all these different kind of size teams and companies. And I'd really love to know how you're handling that whole success and support kind of breakdown. All right. That said, that brings us to my favorite part of each and every week. It's this week's shout outs. These are the things that are making us happy. So happy. We want to shout them out from the rooftops and let you know you should be doing, buying, whatever. Insert verb here. That's what I'm going to say there. So after I was talking with Livingston earlier, after this is our 85th episode, which is insane, first off. So 85 episodes for three or four of us, it's probably at least like, 150 to 200 different shout outs. And it's hard to figure out a shout out now. So, that being said, Livingston, have you got a good shout out for this week?
Well,
is it an app? It's probably an app.
I think it's good. And it's actually not an app. So my verb would be listening, because it's a new podcast that I've found on the relay.fm podcast network, called Cortex. And so there's only, I think, four episodes so far. So it's easy to jump in and catch up, but it's been a really neat discussion around some productivity stuff and how people organize their various devices, and just lots of things that fascinate me, like how other people work and that kind of thing. So I definitely recommend checking it out if you're looking for a kind of an easy to listen to podcast and something that hasn't been going on forever, so you can catch up easily.
Jeff, what do you got?
I wanted to shout something out, but I'm still early in it, so I think I'm gonna wait on that. I was kind of weighing it the whole episode, but instead I want to make a more general shout out, because we were in there were four of the Wistia team, four Wistians, in Portland this past week, and on Saturday we met up at a bar. I can't remember what the name of it. It was like a brewery, like a brew pub type thing, which are all over the place in Portland. And we went in there and they had board games was stacked up right in the entryway of the bar. And we sat down and we played Evil Apples and just chatted, right? Like just gave each other trouble for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I will just shout out in general bars that support the idea than having a single beer, because I can't drink more than two or I'd fall over, and playing board games. If you're down with that as a bar, I salute you. So generic shout out to awesome hangouty bars. giving bars a good name.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, when you find a spot like that, it's just, there's no other word for it. It's just awesome. That's it. End of the day.
And it's like micro shout out to Evil Apples, because how is that game as good for a 30-year-old as it is for a 14-year-old? Like, how is that possible? So
I don't know. I play regular Apples to Apples, and that's Evil Apples, right? Just like the bad version of Apples to Apples?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Did I say Evil Apples more than once? I meant Apples to Apples. I'm sorry. Evil Apples is the game I play on my phone that's Cards Against Humanity, but on your phone.
I was confused there, because I was like, wait, do you mean Cards Against Humanity, or is there like another version of Apples to Apples?
I meant Apples to Apples the whole time.
I mean, I hang out with 30-year-olds, and that's what we do. We play Apples to Apples. We did that like last New Year's Eve. So seriously, if you're not playing it, you should play it. My shout out this week is one that I went into the show having absolutely nothing, and Chase Livingston had a great suggestion of the podcast, so I'm going to throw one in for that. NPR does a great one called Planet Money, and it's been around for a while. Really fantastic show. The latest one they did, or I think it might be two episodes before, look for the one that talks about, I want to say the Raisin King, but that's not the Raisin King. It's something, I'm looking it up real quick. The Raisin Outlaw. That's what it is. Episode 478, The Raisin Outlaw. And it's an absolutely fascinating look at kind of this archaic law about how many raisins you can grow and how many you can sell and how many you have to put away. And is that really legal? It was really cool. Got all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they just handed down that ruling last week along with all the others. So, yeah, really, really interesting story. I would have never thought there's that much drama raising raisins. It's absolutely insane. So we'll have that up and all the other short notes that will all be up shortly, supportops.co. Make sure to let us know how your team's handling that whole kind of customer success, support, proactive, reactive kind of thing. Hit us up, supportops.co/contact, because that is something that is, I think, is going to be a kind of a theme for the next couple of episodes if everything works out right, kind of looking at proactive versus reactive and digging into the nuts and bolts on that. So the more examples we have, the better show it's going to be. So hit us up there. Other than that, watch out for the show notes. That'll be up shortly. And until we see you again next time, have an awesome week.